This is Patrick Daly and welcome to Interlinks. Interlinks is a program about connections, international business, supply chains and globalization and the effects these have had actually on our life, our work and our travel over recent times. Today on Interlinks, we're going to check in on some of the major global regions, namely Europe, North America and Asia Pacific, to see what is going on and what is topical in supply chain. We're also going to touch on what companies are doing generally to overcome the challenges posed by inflation and the shortages of human resources that are kind of generalized across the major regions at the moment. And to discuss these topics, I'm delighted to be joined by two of my colleagues from the Supply Chain Special Interest Group from the Society for the Advancement of Consulting. So that's Lisa Anderson, President of LMA Consulting Group from the Los Angeles metro area. Welcome, Lisa.
Glad to be here.
And David Ogilvy, Principal at David Ogilvy Consulting in Brisbane, Australia. Welcome, David.
Good to be with you again, Patrick.
2 a.m. in Australia, right?
Yes, it is. That's right.
Thanks for being here. So we start with you, Lisa, while David's waking up. What's topical in supply chain in North America at the moment as we kind of come into the summer period? So what is hot as the temperature rises?
Well, I would say that we still have shortages and disruptions, but really inflation is really a hot topic in supply chain. And also, I'm seeing that manufacturing clients are worried about a potential recession in the future. And so they're starting to get very concerned about inventories and having too much inventory and whatever too much is in quotes. And certainly they're still having problems finding people. So there's still plenty of challenges in the supply chain in the U.S.
Yeah. So do you think the fears of recession are founded? You know, like there's full employment and probably there's demand for more. So, you know, people are earning money. So, you know, is it founded or what do you think?
Well, what it appears like is that at some point we will have a recession. It's just the timing. The financial pundits seem to think like late this year or early next year. So I think that they're probably overreacting. On the other hand, the smart clients are looking at how do I reduce inventory in a smart way so they can still support customer needs, but they don't have any excess inventory that's unnecessary. So I guess that's the question, is how do you figure out what's unnecessary and what is necessary to grow the business? Because I do think there'll be more opportunities in the next couple of years than there have been ever before, except for perhaps since the Great Depression, when more companies set themselves up for success for the following for the decades to come than at any other time in history. So I think there'll be an opportunity like that, which means that you have to have product in order to be able to support that type of sales growth as your competition is dwindling. Yeah. However, what is that product and, you know, how do you manage that successfully is the trick. So long answer to your question, Patrick, but I do think a recession is coming, but does that mean that they should be cutting back on inventory? It depends. Okay. And what type of inventory.
And David, what's going on in Asia Pacific? So you're midwinter, I guess. So you're at the other end of the seasonal cycle, at least. So what's happening down there?
Very similar situation, Patrick, although our inflation rate's not as bad as the US. I don't think there's any doubt our Reserve Bank, the American Federal Reserve here, has miscalculated interest rates and so forth to try and get inflation under control. But we're not in the same situation as the US, at least not yet. Companies are experiencing very similar things in many ways. Inventory is still an issue. Rates for containers and slots in ports are still a challenge, although they seem to be easing. I was with a client on Friday and we were talking about fertilizer. They buy and sell a lot of fertilizer, and the comment was, "No, fertilizer's much easier to get at the moment. It's very expensive." So they don't seem to be having a lot of problems getting that particular product at the moment, but the cost of getting it here and the cost of the product is significant. like Lisa mentioned, I think a number of organisations have had the knee-jerk reaction and they've just bought up a lot of stock when things got tight. And I think that knee-jerk reaction has created significant bullwhip effect throughout the whole supply chain in all sorts of different industries. And as people start to get a better handle on that, the whip seems to be settling somewhat. So I've got a very similar opinion to Lisa. I think there are great opportunities coming. I do believe we are probably going to be in for some stagflation. I've been predicting that for a little while now. I'm no economic guru, but just, you know, speaking to people on the ground. But having said that, like you mentioned before, Patrick, there are people in restaurants. And now, you know, I cannot get a booking in a restaurant at my local area at the moment. There are just so many people out and about. Now, whether that's a result of being locked up out of COVID and people are still enjoying their freedoms and all that sort of stuff, who's to know? But, you know, clearly they've got money to spend. Now, whether it's on the credit card or not, I guess is a personal issue, but I do believe that the tightening of the inflationary environment, the interest rates that are coming, are going to put a number of mid-management people under stress that they've never experienced before.
Yeah, I think that's very true here too. Stagflation is a very real possibility.
Now, I wonder about stagflation because I remember the last bout of stagflation. And two of the characteristics of it that we don't have now are that there was very high unemployment, so there was a lack of demand, and there were constraints in the economy that we don't have now in terms of, you know, lack of technology practices, much stronger labor unions, and so on. So it was very difficult for the economy to flex and to adapt to the changing situation. And those two situations we don't have now. We have this kind of strange supply side shortage caused by COVID on the one hand, which seems to have affected the labor market, and the war on the other hand, which is affecting commodities, particularly fuel and energy. So there are some interesting similarities and interesting differences between, say, the 70s, 80s and the 2020s. What's your take on those similarities and differences?
Well, I think you're right, Patrick. I think the unemployment rate is low, and that is probably if that remains that way, that'll be the saving grace, because I think we're just about to enter under 4%, maybe, if we're not yet.
Yeah, same here.
But having said that, we've just had a change of government, and that's got a very different flavour to it here. So it's a more it's a more Labor favoured government here, and there is significant potential for unemployment to increase soon. So that'll probably be the foundational block to determine whether stagflation occurs or not will be the unemployment rate, because, you know, we could find ourselves in certainly inflationary times because we're already there, and potentially low growth environment, and that will create the unemployment, which will then fill the gap and give us all the conditions we need for that to occur.
I noticed, Lisa, you were writing about this future opportunity for companies to get ready for the longer term, but you were also talking in that piece about the reshoring phenomenon from Asia to America. So what's going on there? What are you seeing there? How's that progressing?
I'm definitely seeing that companies are reshoring and nearshoring. So they're moving to the US, Mexico, and Latin America to support US consumers, if you will, or, you know, US demands. They're not advertising it necessarily, though, because, like, I've had several media requests about this, and they asked me, like, can you put me in touch with a client? Well, what client wants to tell the world that they're reshoring or nearshoring because they're going to lose their supply in Asia? That makes no sense at all. So, you know, a lot of this is going on quietly, relatively speaking. So, you know, it's going to be tricky. And some of it is in the news. So, like, you know, I was talking about the chip computer chip production. It went from, I mean, the US once upon a time, several years ago, but we produced 40% of the computer chips we need. Now we only produce 12%. We are starting to add some capacity back, but it's like a drop in the bucket compared to what we need, especially with all the technology needs, et cetera. And that's just one industry. So I think, you know, it's happening, but there's a vast opportunity. It's like a drop in the bucket compared to what needs to happen, I guess you could say, to support our demand. It depends, of course, on what happens in Asia, if there's like conflicts between Taiwan and China and, you know, what all goes on in the world. But by all means, reshoring is happening, but probably not at a fast enough pace overall is what I would say.
Yeah, I guess that reshoring phenomenon, I remember reading books. There's a specialist in globalization. He's an Indian-American author, academic, and books of his written in 2015, 2016. And he was already seeing then in the data a kind of a shift in globalization into a form of regionalization even then.
Right.
So that has been, I guess, accelerated by the recent shocks that we've had, and now there's kind of a requirement to speed it up, but it's difficult. So if you have 1,000 people in a factory in China and you want to reshore it or nearshore it, and we've just been talking about labor shortages, you're not going to be able to hire 20 people here, never mind 1,000 people. So you're going to have to change almost the manufacturing strategy, right, if you want to bring it back.
Right. Yeah. Right. You're going to need to automate more and utilize more technology, and you are going to need people though, and you're going to need some higher skilled people. So yeah, you are going to have to change strategy, but you also are going to have to, I mean, Shanghai's been was shut down for a few months. So, you know, like there's a lot of issues going on throughout the world, and it's made at least the smart executives think like they need to start doing something now if they plan to be around in a few years. Mm-hmm. And the family business owners in the US perhaps don't like care in quotes because they're just thinking, I'm going to sell this business and move on like to my retirement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. David, you were going to say something.
Yeah, only that we've got similar pressures here. There's a lot of talk, particularly with the new government, of course, about what they're going to do for the manufacturing industries in Australia and so forth. But I've said this a number of times on our podcasts over the time. I think what's going to stop that happening here in Australia is the cost of energy. We've got a situation at the moment where in my hometown in Brisbane, we nearly had to have load shedding because the market had got out of control and it was just too expensive. We were nearly having blackouts. So the cost of energy is a huge driver in this country, and I don't believe that we've got the energy policy from either government that's going to give us a satisfactory level of cost of energy for manufacturers to really thrive in this country. Mm. So that means they have to find other ways of getting the uncertainty and the disruptions out of their supply chain. We're not going to be able to do what they do in America, and that's bring it back, at least not in the short term.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up a really good point, Patrick, because the cost of energy is causing changes in the U.S. as well, because states like California that have policies more similar to Australia, manufacturers are leaving in droves, and they're moving to the states that have friendlier cost of energy policies.
So the states that are benefiting are places like Texas, maybe?
Yep. Texas, Tennessee are the two top ones. But, you know, North Carolina, you know, lots of the South is benefiting quite well. And actually from California, like Arizona is benefiting, you know, and some other places in the West Coast that are that have friendlier policies to business. It's not just energy, but like California has the worst energy costs in the US. So that's like a big one, but there's many other policies that inhibit business that are in addition to energy.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, our government's just going to, they're pushing down the green road substantially more. And until that industry can prove itself that it's going to give us reliable supply at a cheap cost and without getting political about it, I'm not sure that's going to happen anytime soon. then we're just looking down the barrel of higher and higher costs, and manufacturers have got some serious decisions to make in this country. So we might be more attuned to nearshoring, so get it out of China, but somewhere else, maybe India, maybe Vietnam, maybe Mexico. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to come back here.
93.9, Dublin South FM.
What's Australia's relationship economically to Indonesia? Because that's probably your nearest and largest neighbor in the region, is that right?
Yes, it is. And they're certainly both a close country where we do a lot of trade with. So, you know, always the new prime minister, their first overseas trip is to Indonesia. And that's happened again this time. Yeah, the first trip he went overseas was to Indonesia. So, yes, they are a very key ally, but they also are a key threat because Indonesia is not always the friendliest country towards us militarily. So there is always an underlying threat from Indonesia. So it's a double-edged coin, that one.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, certainly Indonesia and Malaysia are again, another two areas. Indonesia has got the lower labour costs. Some parts of Malaysia, not so much, but in the other parts it does. So they are also options for manufacturers.
Yeah, and Indonesia is really an up-and-coming country, massive population.
Yes.
And as the affluence grows there, it'd be a great market also for Australia, particularly, correct, I guess, in services as well as advanced products.
The challenge with Indonesia, of course, is freight, because it's a multitude of islands.
Yes.
It's just not one landmass.
Yeah. Actually, I was in Amsterdam last week, and interesting that the Netherlands was the colonial power in Indonesia. So yes. Amsterdam is full of Indonesian restaurants, and we went to one. It was fabulous. The food was really, really good. I'm sure you've tasted it many times, David.
Well, that's one of the good parts about Darwin, because it's so close to there. They get a lot, and it's the food scene in Darwin's quite good.
Yeah, interestingly, on the freight question, in Amsterdam, I was attending an event. It was a supply chain event, and there were a number of delegates there from Maersk, who, as you know, are one of the major shipping lines. And apparently they have a lot of new capacity coming on next year, which I guess, depending on how other things go in the market, it may help to ease the rates. They will, of course, be taking capacity out with ships that are obsolete. So the new ships that are coming in will be more more environment friendly, let's say.
They've got a big battery, have they, Patrick?
Sorry?
They got a big battery.
I don't think they're electric yet. That we'll probably see that in the future, but they're more efficient in their use of liquid fuels, carbon based fuels. But there was an interesting conversation sprang up about their relationship, how they're going to play the market when that happens, because they've been really making a lot of money in over the last year or so, and how they're going to adjust their rates in the future when the capacity comes on. So they said anyway is that they're very interested, and they've made some headway in having kind of different types of strategic relationships with their customers as opposed to maybe how it was in the past. So we'll see whether that lasts after more capacity comes on and rates perhaps begin to diminish.
Well, there's a lot of companies around that have made the most of the current disruptions and have looked at their margins, and, you know, everybody's improved their profitability. But I suppose the new ships raises the questions. We might have new slots to put containers in, but do we have the containers to put in there?
Yeah.
Right.
Another, I suppose, looking at the projects I'm working on kind of gives an idea of what the issues are around here. So I was looking across some of my projects. One is to do with switching of transportation modes, particularly from road to rail. And one of the drivers of that is to decrease carbon emissions. So a lot of the companies who are interested in that are very concerned about fuel costs, fuel consumption, carbon emissions, and so on. So that's a big hot topic here. And Europe's of all the regions, it's probably the region that's under most pressure with regard to energy and with regard to dependence on Russia, particularly in Germany and Austria and some of the Eastern countries. And Germany which has very green credentials in general, is actually considering going back to coal as a temporary stopgap measure to get through the next period. Some of the other projects I'm working on, there's a lot of automation in them, and I guess that's driven by issues to do with labor availability. One is in the distribution sector, which is to automate order picking, because I think difficulty getting people in that space. And another is with regard to streamlining organizations and improving productivity. And that's again because of difficulties in finding and retaining people in logistics type operations all around the world, I guess. I was also listening to an economist recently who had an interesting take on what's going on with labor. So he was saying we have this phenomenon now where we have full employment. So there are more people in employment in this country now than there ever were. But there are lots of vacancies in companies, more than there were before. So you're going, well, what's going on there? So it seems what he was saying is what's happening is that people are employed. They're just not employed by companies. They don't want to work for companies anymore. So people are leaving and setting up on their own, doing their own thing. And I guess we're probably examples of that. A lot of us are kind of
exactly
refugees from companies, but we're probably ahead of the game. We've been doing this for maybe a decade or two decades at this stage. So I was actually thinking, I'll see what your take is on this idea. I was thinking that in the future, we might see a situation where companies work differently. So internally, they'll have lots of automation and they'll have small teams of people who will be there to run the steady state. But then when they need to do projects, it'll almost be like making a movie. You know, that there's a promoter or a producer of the movie, and they pull together all of these specialists.
Business by contractor.
Yeah, and they come in and they do the project, then they disappear, and then they may come again together, the same team or a different team for another company or for the same company. What do you think of that kind of future? Do you think we're looking at something like that?
I don't think so.
No?
No, I don't think so. Your core businesses, like your supply chain managers and your inventory controllers and those sorts of things, they need to have industry experience. They need to understand the business. They need to understand the seasonality and those sorts of things. If you're coming and going, you'll be constantly learning, you know, what's the current environment that I'm working in. I think they need some consistency around the knowledge of the product and the business and those sorts of things. I think that'd be.
Sorry,
I interrupted.
Well, I think they need a base set of people to David's point that can, you know, that's familiar with the business, that's there in the business. But I do think that in addition to that, the more successful clients are the ones that are, you know, like I've had several clients bringing us on to help them improve their processes or implement technology and, you know, make things better. But in the meantime, we've done some fill-in type of work as well to help them bridge gaps. And so I see them doing that, but, you know, you can't bridge a gap and then just keep it that way where you have teams of people coming in to run the day-to-day. So I think it's more, they have to have, like David said, like people who are going to run the day-to-day, but folks, they are going to rely more on outside help to bridge gaps and improve processes, which, you know, can kind of be done in concert with one another is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's astonishing. I didn't realize this, but at the event as well, we had a demonstration of an AI tool for supply chain. And it's kind of an approach to use decision intelligence over planning. So this AI, if you like, scans over all of the applications that are working in a business. So you could have a transport management system, a warehouse management system, a manufacturing execution system, ERP, the whole thing. And this thing is going over all of that and extracting data. And it's making decisions. And it's suggesting then actions to managers to carry out based on the analysis that it's done. But then also it's learning and it's feeding back into that. And then some of those decisions, instead of saying, listen, here are some options to do it, you can simply automate those decisions. So we may see a lot of what people do now becoming actually automated, and where people intervene is in very high-end type decisions. So, you know, that may be the future.
Well, I definitely think technology is going to help to minimize the number of people that you need. And like you said, you're going to end up needing more of the higher skilled folks to review information and make adjustments. So yeah. It's going to create a whole new set of challenges for, you know, how anyone gets to that point of having the high end skills without going through the basics. So I don't know how that'll happen, but.
Sure. So I've had a client, have a small prototype project in AI, particularly around forecasting and so forth, with one of the big software vendors. They've got an AI tool on their platform and so forth. And in the end, they canned that project. It wasn't delivering the results that they thought it would. I must admit, I actually think AI has got more applications in the medical field. Around diagnosis of diseases and those sorts of things. It seems to be making really solid advancements in that space. Whereas when I'm seeing AI being applied to the business environment, I'm not 100% sure it's going to be as productive or as valuable.
Okay. Well, then maybe just as we come into the last couple of minutes, just like to ask you, are you you reading or listening to anything inspiring at the moment? Have you been to any events? Anything you can share with us there, Lisa?
I went to a logistics and e-commerce summit recently, and in this area, because I'm in Southern California, there was a lot of conversations about, you know, we've made actually tremendous progress when it comes to being energy efficient and green. However, the rules and regulations are outpacing, strangely enough, the ability for folks to meet those needs. So basically, if they really hold the law, if you will, and what they've said they're going to do, at least in California, like we won't have, like we're going to lose at least half our truckers going to the ports to pick up product, in early 2023, which would obviously be a disaster. So I don't know, but I think that we're, you know, in places like California, we're coming in for a big clash between the ability to keep businesses moving and flowing and, you know, the green energy goals and how quickly they can be achieved. Mm-hmm. 'Cause, you know, like even autonomous vehicles, they're making really good progress. However, it's not ready for prime time, if you will. Yeah. So it's still going to take longer, basically, is what that conference was saying. And
yeah, there are still lots of
challenges out there from a supply chain point of view.
We're facing a lot of crunches. What about you, David? Reading or listening to anything inspiring at the moment, or been to any good events?
Well, the event I went to recently was the manufacturing conference down in Sydney. So that was good to see that back in train. We've got the one in Melbourne again next year. But I must admit, I've been busy organising my own events. So my executive lunches and things have been keeping me busy in that space. From a book's perspective, I haven't read any work-related books lately. I picked up one on I think it was your recommendation, on the history of the world.
Tom Holland. And,
yes.
Yeah.
So I'm finding that quite interesting.
Yeah, that's he's making the point about how Western civilization owes so much to Christian philosophy, really, isn't that what he's saying? And that it comes from even before Christ. So Christian philosophy comes from before Christ. So I guess that's an interesting way to end the podcast on supply chain, talking about Christian philosophy. But there we are. So thanks again, guys, for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always, and look forward to having you back here next month. Thanks also to our listeners for tuning in. And you can find the Interlinks podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Acast, and other podcast platforms. Any comments or questions, just drop me a line on pdaly@albalogistics.com. So in the meantime, keep well, stay safe, and see you next time.